Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Steve is here. We're connecting to his audio. Steve is here. We're connecting to his audio.
Jojo. Return to game classy.
Remember when those albums were all the rage? Like you couldn't go 5 minutes without seeing a commercial for like. What were they like? Something moods.
Pure moods. Yeah, those were on TV constantly.
I always liked the golden oldies of the '70s. That was always my favorite one.
I remember the pure moods because of Return to Innocence and
Sail Away.
I actually like Enya.
Well, so does all of Ireland. She's like the highest grossing performer in Ireland.
Oh,
yeah. And she's never toured. She makes that much money.
Well, she's like really, if I remember correctly, she's really private. She like lives in like a small house in like the wilderness, and like no one knows where she is.
It sounds like something someone named Enya would do.
Yeah, I'm down.
No, it was pure moods. Classical Thunder was a big one, and then I remember like the songs of the '70s. I think it was like golden oldies songs of the '70s.
And there was always the one that was like had like the Happy Days aesthetic, and it was like old '50s music.
That was just the soundtrack to American Graffiti, Steve. Which I still say is one of the greatest soundtracks of all time, except for the fact that you constantly have Wolfman Jack coming in every like after every song, going like, "All right, there's another Wolfman Jack. I'm gonna take you right now." And you're just like, oh my God, Wolfman Jack, you just ruined that song.
Hey, you, I know you were jamming to that song, but hey.
It's like when you reach the point of no return, and suddenly the porno switches to someone's face and they're just not having it.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. You're like in a great mood. You're like, yeah, these are the happy days. And then all of a sudden it's like, Wolfman Jack, I'm here. It's like, ah.
And then it's not a happy day.
No, I am going to rock around this clock tonight.
Rock around the cock.
Hey. It's Rock Around the Clock is like the least rockin'est song on the planet. And it's like, I know it gave birth to the genre of rock and or roll, but still.
I think that's debatable.
No. It's kind of like, that's like the song that everyone kind of points it to. The world has already agreed on this, Steve. You could be a contrarian. I'm just telling you, the world has agreed on this.
I mean, I'm not saying I don't know. I'm not saying I disagree, and I'm not saying I agree. I'm just saying I'm sure that's debatable.
Well, you got to remember, it's a white person that played rhythm and blues. That's rock and roll. No joke, because you can't call it rhythm and blues if a white guy's doing it. What a wonderful discussion for this post-Juneteenth. Anywho,
started out hot.
Anyway, welcome to Game Classy. I am your host, Joe, and with me as always is my co-host, Steve.
Hello.
Out in the ether there. Today I did some scrounging to see if we could actually come up with some gaming content. Mm-hmm. It took a while.
Well, I've got one gaming related thing and then one non-gaming related thing. That's all.
All right, let's go with your gaming related thing first.
All right, the gaming related thing is from Raza.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sent us over a Kickstarter for a little game, little skirmish game called Slime Skirmish, and I really like it. I really like it. It's little slimes. They're like the Dragon Quest style slimes. So they have they're like the real rounded body with the like kind of like comes to like not really a point because it's, you know, soft.
Yeah.
But they look like a droplet.
Yeah.
And they've got there's a ton of different kinds. There's like cosplay ones. So they're in like little cute outfits, like a ninja. There's one that is topical. He is completely covered in toilet paper. He is the toilet paper hoarder, which I thought was pretty good. But then there's also I guess you're fighting over pie and cake, which is awesome. So yeah, it looks really cute.
This totally looks up your alley.
It does. It you know why it looks up my alley? Because it is up my alley.
Well, okay, yeah. Yes, yes.
It's very cute. And yeah, and it's $30 for a slime kit, and then you get cake and pie. So I mean it's a low cost of entry to get some really adorable looking slimes. And
yeah, that is really low cost for a Kickstarter at this
point. And even if you never play the game, these guys are definitely something that you could paint and put on your desk.
I was going to say, like, they're even just great for Dungeons and Dragons or whatever if you just need some slimes.
Also true. Yeah, that would be pretty great. You can make your players feel really guilty about fighting slimes.
I do like in the starter slime set, I don't know if this is intentional, but the one guy who's a cube, I just think, is he a gelatinous cube?
I would assume so.
Yeah.
I mean, his name, he's specifically named QB. So
okay, I didn't see that part. I didn't pay that much attention. I just like anything that is a gelatinous cube.
Yeah, he's named QB, so I mean that seems pretty cut and dry that he is in fact our favorite, the gelatinous cube.
Now, here's a question for you. Right. Is a gelatinous cube shaped because dungeons are naturally square and they just take up their entire area and just evolved over time into becoming a gelatinous cube?
So there is several the origins of slimes and stuff are debated. I don't believe that the cube is debated. I think the cube is the one that has like the most distinct, like, this is where it's from.
So yes.
The cube did not evolve. The cube was created specifically by a mage to clean his dungeon.
Okay, so it is designed to be cube shaped so that it can go up against 90 degree angled walls.
Yep.
It's designed to be as
big as the corridor it's in.
And
that's exactly why it's a cube.
I don't know why I'm so happy with myself for coming up with this shower thought on my own when it obviously already was thought up.
It also is very specifically cube shaped because it's super translucent. That's the other thing. It's like gelatinous cubes are fun, and like I love the stories and they're great. But like the actual like concept of gelatinous cubes is fucking horrifying because they're like the one of the base goals is that they can just be in a room. And they're like, if they're not moving and they have nothing inside them, they're invisible.
Yeah.
So you would open the door and just walk into the slime.
And be slowly digested.
Yes, yes, be melted.
Which is awful, in my opinion. It's like the worst way that you could possibly die is to be like digested. I just find that horrifying.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
Like, yes. Like most people are like, what's the greatest way that you could be that you could die? And like some people are like falling from a great height or like drowning or something, like they're at the being shot. Nope, me being digested.
What's your greatest death fear? Being eaten by a gelatinous cube.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're right.
You should be afraid.
Yes. Yes, that is a valid and very, very real and present danger.
The fact that the Trump administration has not taken on gelatinous cubes and their dangers is surprising to me. I think that'd be something that he would jump on board with.
You know what? It may be. And I mean, I don't want to get all, you know, conspiracy theory here or, you know, start, you know, going down that route. But maybe Trump's a gelatinous cube.
No, he's not.
He could be a cube in a skin suit.
You know? Skin suited cubes.
The skin suited cube, you know?
Now we got to worry about gelatinous cubes coming over and taking our jobs.
See? And digesting us alive.
And digesting us alive, Jesus.
it's really cute. And they have there's a little cosplay one that has a monk, a gunslinger, a cyborg, steampunk little guy, an alien. This is the only acceptable steampunk miniature I will accept.
Is it wearing a top hat, Steve?
He's got a gigantic top hat and goggles. It's like the classic steampunk look. So the big top hat and goggles, and he's got the little steampunk blaster. There's a cowboy, a pirate, and then there's some holiday ones. There's Santa, jack-o'-lantern, and there's baby slime swarm, like tiny little guys. But yeah, it looks really cute. I like it. And there's also like there's a gigantic like mouth open slime that is actually somewhat terrifying looking, which I also enjoy.
Which you also adore.
Yeah, it's very cute. I like it a lot.
He got lucky in that he actually sent it to us like the day that we were recording.
Yeah,
could actually talk about it as opposed to what we normally do, which is forget.
Yep. kid you not. I was booting up the system, I saw a message, and he messaged us on Facebook, and I was like, oh yeah, sure. Like, yeah, I've always backed his Kickstarters before, but hell yeah, little slime guys. Fuck yeah. Super cute. Yeah. They're adorable. I love them.
All right.
Ben, you want to tickle my fancy? You got it. That's the way.
You want to tickle Steve's fancy? You got to find a classic dungeon monster and make it cute.
Yes.
And not just like, not fake cute. Like sometimes they try to make like owl bears and stuff. No, he wants it real cute.
That's right. It's got to be real cute. It's good.
Bugbears, yo. Bugbears.
Bugbears. I like bugbears.
I don't like bugbears because they're not aptly named.
I think they actually, if I'm, you know what, I this might be a fever dream, but I fucking swear I like looked up what bugbears, what, like why they were called that, and like it actually turns out that they are aptly named. Like it's like
they are not bears, like, Steve. I don't care. They're not bears or bugs. They're not bugs either.
They're kind of shaggy looking. Well, not the Pathfinder ones. The Pathfinder ones made bugbears scary. I don't like the Pathfinder bugbears. I like the D&D bugbears because they're silly and they have hairy like Lon Chaney Wolfman faces.
If I'm gonna have a bugbear should be like a dire bear, except it should be more, I think, more human-esque, so to speak. Like that's my ideal of what a bugbear should be.
Oh, like a humanoid bug slash bear.
Yeah. Like maybe they're not a bug because they're insects, but because they're causing a bugaloo or something like that. Like that's how they got their name to begin with.
Okay. Now I remember. I just looked it up because I'm literally.
So you don't remember at all. You just looked it up.
No. Well, I looked it up and then that caused me to remember where I had that thought that it was an apt name. And it is because the term bugbear is an old worldy term. It's from its origins of the 16th century, and it literally is an imaginary being invoked to frighten children, typically a sort of hobgoblin supposed to devour them. Like it's an actual real word. Like it's not a made up thing. It's a real word that was used in the lexicon.
If it was 1500s, that probably would have been German.
It's his late 16th century, probably from the obsolete bug slash bogey, plus a bear, and it's of unknown origin.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I think if I'm remembering correctly from my days of yore in college, I think the term bear, like the word bear, literally means scary thing that we can't call by its real name. Because if you called a bear by its real name, a bear would come and get you. So they made up this thing that was like thing, this word bear, which doesn't mean actually bear, so that they could talk about it without invoking the actual bear coming.
That's kind of awesome.
If I remember correct, I could be wrong. I'm almost positive it's bear, but.
That's awesome. I mean, and I fucking love bears. They're fucking cute. They're adorable. They're like, you know, they're rigged, but bears are fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely fucking terrifying. Because many moons ago, I was talking to a friend who went to work on an oil pipeline in Alaska, and he was just chit-chatting about the various work he's doing, and got into like some of the weird, like, this is how it is out there, it's blah 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 blah, and I shit you not, like he just like very casually like I was like he's like, yeah, so I was working this guy he says, I don't remember the name, but he's like, he's this one of the guys there just disappeared, and then I was new, and so I'm eventually I was like, I talked to the foreman, and I'm like, hey, like what happened to Bill? And the foreman was like, oh yeah he disappeared like 6 or 7 days ago, and so we figure a bear got him, and they just fucking like went on their day. Turned out dude legit just got killed by a fucking bear. Like they found like remnants of him.
Yeah.
And then, like, and I was like does that happen that often? And he's like I guess, he's like, it happens often enough to where they were just like, he probably got killed by a bear, and like nobody batted an eye about it. I was like, are you fucking serious?
That does not surprise me in the least.
Yeah. So apparently
it's also why I don't go out in nature. Cause nature will kill you.
It doesn't want you.
It does not want you. We spent how many years? Like 10,000 years of human evolution to the point where we finally got to stop living in forests in the wild and like develop cities so we could be safe. And now what do we do for fun, Steve? We go back out into the woods where it's unsafe.
Hey, you don't say we. I would never go out into the woods.
Well, I'm saying we as in, you know, a humanity.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say this. There's probably plenty of like quote unquote wilderness areas one would go to that I'd be like, all right. Cause I mean, there's always the fact that, you know, like the big cats and like, there's lots of like dangerous things that are on the periphery.
Ooh, dangerous.
On the periphery of where we all live, you know, cause you just occasionally see them and you're like, you know, like people are like, oh, that's crazy that they saw like, I don't know, a mountain lion like in a town. And it's like, it's not crazy at all. There's a fuck ton of mountain lions all around you. You just don't see them.
Well, my favorite is the we have sandhill cranes out here and, you know, I usually see them from far and they're like, oh, okay, it's a crane. However, I had two in my backyard once.
They're huge.
Those things are legit dinosaurs.
Yeah,
I was
huge.
Scared shitless by this thing. They were at least 6 foot. They were as tall as I was.
Yep. It's fucking huge.
They were 6 foot tall if they were an inch, Steve.
I believe you. Cranes are huge. They're not super scary. You don't need to be super scared of them, but obviously don't fuck with them because they will hurt you.
I don't mess with nature as a whole.
I'm telling you, but that's another thing. Speaking of bears, it's kind of funny. It's just one of those things where like people don't know. It seems like most people I found personally, they're either afraid of everything or afraid of nothing. It's like most people don't know exactly like where they should. Like a perfect example. Like I was doing some work the other day and like I there was a spider and I just like reached out and, you know, with my hand and grabbed it and I was like, get out of here, spider. You know, I didn't want to squish it. So I just moved it. But like, that's something that like a lot of people wouldn't do. Or like, I've also had things where like I've grabbed spiders before with my hands, just kind of, you know, ushered them outside. And like people in the room with me were like fucking horrified that I just went up and grabbed a spider and just like, you know, took it out. And I was like, it's a completely harmless spider. Like, this is not a spider to be scared of. And, but they're like, all like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. Like,
well, to crazy. Be fair, those people were Australians. So.
Well, but that's the thing. It's like, it's not that you can't be afraid of any spider. There are plenty of spiders that are very dangerous, but you know, it's just knowing which ones are which. And like, and in perfect example, I've seen people who are like there's like one of those big hornets where they're they're just like, eh, whatever, and they just whale it with their hand, like it's like on their shoulder and they just whack it with their hand. And well, I'm like, You are a madman. Like, that's actually fucking terrifying.
Well, you probably know about that because you are one of the biggest weebs I know, but they keep those giant Japanese like killer wasps, those big things. They keep Japanese them as pets.
Yeah.
If you isolate them from the hot and from the, like their swarm or whatever, they're actually really docile.
Yeah, they get docile because they don't hit. Because they're that's the thing about a lot of insects is they're colony insects. If they don't have, because they speak to each other with mostly hormones, which is why you get attacked by a swarm of bees, because those bees aren't individually making the decision of deciding you are a threat and attacking you. It's because at some point a bee fired out, we're in danger pheromone, we're gonna fuck this thing up, whatever it is. That's why one bee suddenly leads to a fucking 100 bees.
What's the meme where it's like, the elephants have a special sound they make when bees are near. Isn't that amazing? And then the other person responds and goes, yeah, we have that too. It's, bees.
Yes, bees. Absolutely. But if you take them away from that pheromone, they'll never have that like immediate, like I'm going to attack you. They'll still sting you because like they still have the ability to, you know, feel threatened on their own or make the choice of biting or stinging on their own. But you're never going to have it will never just like fly on you and sting you. Like that's so unlikely, which is good because apparently it feels like getting shot by a bullet made of lava.
Yeah, I'm not playing with any of that, you know. I'm afraid of like real nature. I'm not afraid of city nature. Like, I don't get scared of like raccoons or possum or
critters.
Yeah, like, you know, but that's nature. You know, those do exist in nature. Squirrels, they don't bother me. Some people are afraid of squirrels and shit like that.
That's wild. That is wild. Like, how can you be afraid of us? Squirrels are like the most goofy looking, cute little things, and all they want is to eat little snacks. Like, that is like possums too. Like, possums are actually dope. Like, I saw people like really afraid of possums, and I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Like, possums are awesome. Like, possums are
a big one, bitey.
Bitey. Possums are 100% positive. Like, they can't catch rabies. All they do is eat like dangerous animals.
They eat ticks.
That's one of the big things. They eat other things that can harm you severely. And they're real docile, and they're just babies. I love possums. I fucking love possums.
that's great.
And they're the only, I believe, the only marsupial that exists outside of Australia, which is kind of cool.
The only native marsupial native to outside of Australia.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, then. They're trying to take our marsupials.
I'm wondering at the point where marsupials will evolve to mimic humans, because that's what marsupials do. They just mimic the niche that they're put into. So I wonder how long we'll start getting marsupial humans.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I could use the pouch to store, like, you know, a cell phone and stuff.
We don't actually know if Australians are not marsupials. Like, I've never checked under the hood of an Australian. I'm just saying.
Well, I think it's time for me to fly out and
Hugh Jackman
and make a Japanese an Australian date.
Hugh Jackman could be one of the most successful marsupials of all time, and we just don't know.
You might be right.
Like, they're hiding it. Like, they're a subgroup of humans. We don't know.
I mean, there's all the secret amphibians in the United States government, so it makes sense.
All right, David Icke. let's be fair. Lyndon LaRouche was right. Oh, man. That's one of my favorite memes that's come lately was the it's like Denver Airport, like when you get off on the wrong elevator, what do you see? And it's like lizard people and all that fun shit. I love conspiracy culture, but I also hate that conspiracy culture exists the way it does. It's like conspiracy theorists ruin conspiracy theory.
People who took conspiracy theorists very seriously ruined conspiracy theory.
I know. It used to be fun. Like, lizards run the government. And you're like, yeah, right. This is great. Let's just read up on it and see where your thoughts go. But now it's like people, like, right, lizard people run the government. And then people go and they try and find YouTube videos to show Hillary Clinton's third eye or third eyelid or whatever it is.
I saw the second eye set blink. I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
or like, look, Obama's tongue flickered like a lizard.
Yeah, it's like, shit.
Yeah, these people, it's not right, not right. All right, let's talk some game stuff. So GW had two big announcements this week. First is that the Elves are finally getting released after they got delayed.
Let me tell you, man, COVID. That fucking giant like cow dude with
the cows.
With the mountain growing out of his back and the big ass hammer. Whoo boy. I guess I said online, I was like, I'd never paint an elf army unless.
I bet you could do an all cow army. I'm sure that exists as a list.
It's really cool. Like, I think it's very cool. I'll probably be looking at the rules at least, because I mean, those guys are very, like, just the fact he's a fucking mountain growing out of his back is so cool.
I'm sorry. I just think it's dumb. I think the cows are dumb.
I don't like the infantry. I think the infantry looks silly because their horns are so big.
The cows or the elf infantry?
The elf infantry with the cow hats.
And the hammers, yeah.
Yeah, because there's two cows. There's the giant, like,
there's the actual cows, and then there's the people. There's the cow cosplay. The cowsplay.
Yes, I don't like the cowsplay. The cowsplay guys, I think their horns are a bit too big. So if I were to do those, I'd probably I mean, who am I kidding? I wouldn't put in the work. But I would be like, yeah, I should have cut off these horns, but I wouldn't do that because that's probably high effort. So
yeah, I mean, I don't care for the army. I think it looks kind of dumb. I'm not. I mean, it's fine. I mean, people will love it. People will do. There's a couple models I really like. Like, the one I think I like is the, I think it is, it's the Teclis model, where he's got like the weird Sphinx where he's like floating. Like I'm like
the face.
I'm like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that model as well. I just don't like the way that the where Teclis is in that model. I think the it just creates a very bizarre profile. So you can, I would just move Teclis like in just the way it's assembled in the thing. I would move that around. I would not leave it as is because it just looks weird.
Yeah,
silhouette. The silhouette is very broken.
The silhouette. No, I love the whole look of that model. I'm just kind of like when I see it, I'm just like, ugh. I'd never be able to paint that.
I know that the real truth of this, no matter how much you say otherwise, is because they're not wood elves.
That's true.
And we all know.
You love the wood elves.
You are a wood elfman.
I am a wood elfman. Yeah.
No, I really like the archers. They're very cool. I think the characters, the character models are some of the best I've seen in any army they've ever done. Like they remind me, the last ones I thought though were this good were the character models from the Night Haunt.
Night Haunt.
Because like they have the one guy who's sitting. I mean, guy or girl, maybe, I don't know. They're very ambiguous gendered because they're elves. But yes. They're sitting cross-legged on a floating stone over an obelisk.
That guy's cool.
And then, but it also like goes down to, and like as your eyes move down the figure, you see that the obelisk is actually floating with a bunch of the ground, which is floating up out of the earth. Very, very cool design. I think that figure is incredibly good looking. Love the mountain. I love the two mountain guys. I like that I also like that they took the time to make the mountains on their back distinct as well. Because there's the one with the hammer in each hand and there's the one with the great hammer, and their mountains are actually different, which I thought was a very cool touch. I was like, oh, cool. They actually gave you more than, because, you know, usually with those big kit, well, I don't want to say usually, a lot of times you'll see those big kits that GW will make and they're like, the difference will be so marginal and you're just kind of like, ah, oh, come on. And then I also really like the, I assume caster of the elf with the long silk robes with the facial.
No, I'm thinking that she's owl. Like a, she might be like a priest character.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holding like that, like big, cup, whatever, incense burner.
She probably like. Buffs as opposed to magics.
Yeah, it looks very, very cool. And then I do, like I said, I do like Teclis. I just probably would not put him like floating in the upper right of the model. Just it looks, I think that's the thing that looks the strangest about the model. It's just
the asymmetricality of the model.
Yes. Yeah. And it's so distinct because it's, you know, because it's really two figures. So when you're that's actually a very good example of where you can have a design that's simpler than something like that Bone Lord hero dude who's in his own little like diorama where he has all his retainers. But that is cohesive because he's the centermost figure. You know, he's big and he's standing like, you know, at attention with his shield up, but he's still the focal point of that little diorama. Like you can tell he's the figure that's important in that piece and all of the figures. And there's way more shit around him that's going on than this Teclis model. But it creates a theme, a feel, and a scene just by the way it's designed. This one is just kind of like, it really feels like they designed a very cool, like, Sphinx thing with a very interesting looking death mask, and then had a Teclis, and they were just like, I don't know, just stick Teclis on a wing. Because that's what it is. It was just like Teclis was like slapped haphazardly on the wing. So I do not like that the way that is assembled whatsoever. If I were to do it, I would probably put Teclis like directly in the front of the Sphinx, but below to create, you know, obviously a lower silhouette and a cohesive look for the figure. Because like, where's the focal point? Yeah, that's the whole point. Like, where's the focal point in this model? Like, is the focal point supposed to be the Sphinx? Because if it is, it doesn't work. Because if you look at the Sphinx, your eyes drawn to the floating elf guy. And then is it supposed to be the elf? You look at the elf, your eyes drawn to the Sphinx.
There's a lot of asymmetricality in this army to begin with, which I think is interesting. So, I mean, who knows? It's a conscious design choice. It's not going to please everybody. You're not going to play elves, so it doesn't even matter.
but unless...
You're not playing the elves.
It's unlikely. As I've said before, T3 armies are not for me. So
well, yeah, and the fact that you'd be like, where do I put all of Nurgle's rot? I don't know how to paint an army without Nurgle's rot at this point.
I've got the wheel. No, no, I've done a few little figures to get myself away from just painting Nurgle. But man, you're not entirely wrong. I was reaching for some color palettes. I'm like, wait a minute, like I can't do this.
So yeah, I've printed myself out a Star Wars Legion army. Because A, I'm not going to give any money to Fantasy Flight, and B, I have all the files for it anyway. So I just printed myself out an army, mm-hmm. and I did like a clone trooper army. So I painted them with like some green stripes on them, and I sent them to my buddy who's the big Star Wars guy. And he's like, "Oh, you did like the 41st, you know, Legion." And I'm like, "I painted them this color because I haven't used this color in like a year, so I really want this color."
That's awesome.
Like I have no care whatsoever about any of this. I'm just doing this so I could play a couple games, and it's just like I only painted this because I haven't used it before. I haven't used it in a long time. The color, by the way, is Skarsnik green.
Oh, that's a good color.
Yes, I was. It's Skars. That's the highlight. The it's Warboss green is the actual base.
Oh, also a good color.
Yes.
people give a lot of lore credit to Star Wars, a series that has a character named Elon Sleaze Bagano and the Cantina Band. I'm sure I've said it before, but they're
figuring Dan in the modal nodes.
Yes, and they are playing jizz music because they are jizz whalers. Yes. So
you are also a jizz whaler, if I remember correctly.
Oh, of course. I mean that, but that's besides the point. I'm talking about, you know, what people are, they take that series a little seriously when, I mean, come on.
Well, I don't know if because we talked about The Mandalorian, I know that, right?
Yeah, of course. The Mandalorian was excellent. Yeah. Very good.
Well, I guess Dave Filoni is like put Ahsoka Tano, who's a cartoon, one of the characters from his cartoon show, into the live action Mandalorian. She's going to be played by Rosario Dawson.
Okay.
Right? Which is cool, but then they were like, "Oh, Temuera Morrison has been cast for, and he's going to be in The Mandalorian next season. He's going to play Boba Fett." Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going to myself, I'm like, "He's probably not going to play Boba Fett because he'll probably end up playing Captain Rex because that's a Dave Filoni character. And if there's one thing Dave Filoni loves, it's Dave Filoni. It's like, it's almost to the point where." Lucas loves the world of Star Wars, but hates the characters. Like he hates like all of like, I don't want to come up with any stories or anything. I just want to like play in my big fantasy world where I can make names. It's like Gary Gygax with Greyhawk. Where it's like you just make up a shit ton of stuff and it makes no sense.
Yeah, well, it's because Greyhawk was just supposed to be the background. Like they didn't have a game world, so he's just like, fuck it, I'll do it myself.
I'll do it myself.
Yeah,
I'm Gary Gygax.
Yeah, I am very pleased to meet you. that was one of my favorite gags in Futurama.
I find it a little coincidental that a man named Gygax founds this great dungeon and this great fantasy empire just with like you have a name that's like literally a character from Dungeons and Dragons. Or maybe it's the exact opposite. We only think of that is a Dungeons and Dragons character name because that's what Gary Gygax would name his characters.
it's like Zoldak. That is not a real name. No, it's his real name. Like really? Wow. I believe we've actually talked about that before. Gygax versus Zoldak.
I probably have. We've been doing the show for like 9 years at this point, so we probably have well-tread territory.
It's true. But there's been three famous Gygaxes actually. I believe it is a Swiss name. I think it's Swiss. Swiss? Yeah. Not sure. It's definitely European. I will say that. Yeah. It might not be Swiss, but it is a European as fuck.
I was gonna say it's probably like Hungarian or like Romanian or something like that.
Yeah, could be. Like I said, it's European.
That's it's sure. Czech. I don't know. I just made that up.
It's Czech. That was a very cash money of you, Yugoslavia.
Yugoslavia. The former Republic of Yugoslavia. My dad actually has liquor in his basement that was made in Yugoslavia. Last time I was there, I was like, Dad, this country doesn't exist anymore. In fact, it hasn't existed for close to 30 years.
I'm sure my grandfather has some Yugoslavian shit because he's literally from Yugoslavia. So.
Well, that's a different story altogether. My father was born and raised on the south side of Chicago.
I remember it's one of the things that's cool because you know he's what First generation means you were the first born in the country, right?
That's yes.
Not okay. Yeah. So I'm a first generation person. So, because my mother is also not from America.
But your mom's from like Canada, right?
My mom is from France.
Oh, France.
She was born in France.
Yeah.
So not an actual.
But were her parents American?
No.
Okay. Because there's some people find that like, because if your parents are American, you are American by birth.
Yeah. No. She was French. Her this side, the grandfather is Yugoslavian and grandmother is French. So the fucking I think it might be Serbia or no. Yeah, it's gotta be it's Yugoslavia. I don't know.
Because Serbia is part of Yugoslavia.
Isn't it? Okay. Very good. Yeah. It's hard to keep track because that you know, a lot of that area doesn't fucking exist anymore. It's called something else. It's called like Bosnia and Herzegovina or whatever.
Well, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Croatia, Slovenia, Macedonia, I'm missing one. Kosovo and Serbia are all the former countries that make up Yugoslavia.
Right on. Okay. So
who says Americans don't know our geography?
Funny story about Yugoslavia and Serbia.
I think this might be the only time that a sentence has started. Funny story about Yugoslavia.
is my grandpa, obviously he's from there. So like he's into Serbian music. Apparently there's a really large like Slav rap scene.
Oh yeah.
So like one time I was visiting and he's like blasting this fucking like banger rap song that's all in Serbian and they're singing about Belgrade and I'm like what the fuck is going on? My old ass grandfather lived through World War II fucking banging out to some gangster rap about Belgrade.
There's a Polish rapper who's not very good. I'll go out on a limb and say that, but he's like super popular in Poland. But they took some of his tracks and laid them over the Witcher soundtrack from the game. And that was kind of a big thing for a while.
Oh, that might be pretty good.
It was all right. I mean, the music didn't come from the heart for me. So
that's fair.
You know me, I like my American hardcore gangster rap.
It's different. That's the thing, you know. Rap,
yeah, it's just
always,
yeah, it's
rap a, is
it's,
always about a con. If you're singing a rap song, it should be social commentary about wherever you're from. I think that's what I think is like what the heart of rap is, which is why I hate nerdcore.
Nerdcore is the worst.
Yes, and I think nerdcore is the worst because you're taking a music designed to talk about social issues, like, cause that's all it is. Like, that's every rap song, and even the ones that are like, you know, just stupid like bullshit, it's still something that's about a real social thing. I'm not saying that they're talking about like, you know, the fucking, you know, the great minds. They're singing fucking War and Peace, but you know, some guy talking about pimping ain't easy is in fact still social commentary because he is still laying out the story that he is in fact a pimp and it is not easy.
Well, yeah, and anybody can tell you, pimping is not easy, sir.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I feel there has to be some sort of like, there has to be a social heart to your rapping. But it can, I do believe it can come from anywhere. But it's supposed to be about like a thing.
Steve, one year we should live stream the Eurovision Song Contest with their commentary on it as Americans.
I do not have any issues with Eurovision. It's very meme-y, which is good. But I found that I've never really needed to watch Eurovision specifically because all of the best stuff from Eurovision just gets blasted out online.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's very
meme-y. The epic sax guy. You'll always see the best stuff. There's the dude with like the fire, like super fast violin shit, like all that stuff you always see. So I've kind of been like, do I really watch it? No, but do I know about the best stuff that comes out of it? Kind of.
Yeah. All right. Let's move along to the other big reveal.
I'll be right back. I'm gonna refill my coffee.
Okay. I'm gonna just sit here and talk sexy for a little bit while
Do it.
Steve goes and gets his coffee.
I have returned.
Okay. I just left it blank so I could know I could cut it, because if I was talking, I wouldn't know where to cut.
Ah, nice. Today's one of my fasting days, so I need to make sure that I get my coffee in the morning.
Ah, there you go. Our next big the next big thing from Warhammer was the Indominus box. Indominus.
Yeah, they revealed the full contents. I fucking love it. It's great.
Well, let me tell you, this is a first, because this is the first time that Games Workshop has released a box set with only a one word title. Sometimes it's like Dark Vengeance, or that's, you know, Bloodfire Pass. Like, it's always like you roll two dice on the two D20s and you get the random name generator for whatever your box it's going to be from Games Workshop. Tooth and Claw.
That's true, because the only other ones they did just didn't have a name. They were just like the box that said Warhammer on it.
You know, I think everything post third edition had a name on it.
No, Warhammer fifth edition box, just the box just said Warhammer, and then underneath it says the Game of Fantasy Battles.
No, because fourth edition was Battle for McCrag. Fifth was Black.
I said fantasy.
Oh, fantasy. Yes. Yeah, after fantasy, it was anything after sixth.
Yeah, because third edition was the one that had the Black Templars on the cover, and that was definitely the last one that just said Warhammer 40,000 on the box.
No, yeah, the fantasy, everything after sixth edition, so seventh and eighth both were Battle for Blackfyre Pass and Blood Island, or whatever that one was, like the Secret of Blood Island or whatever.
Also, shout outs to the Warhammer 5th edition box set. I think that still stands as the best Warhammer box set.
The one with the Bretonians?
Yeah, the Bretonians
versus Lizardmen.
Bretonians versus Lizardmen. And I specifically say I think it's the best one. Well, no, Battle for Skull Pass is kind of... Battle for Skull Pass is really good.
Battle for Skull Pass, I will put down as one of the greatest box sets of all time.
Yeah, Battle for Skull Pass is excellent.
The only thing that could have made it better is if they actually put in 10 Dwarves, 10 Thunderers, and 10 Miners, as opposed to like 8 and 6, whatever they did for Gunner.
Yeah.
And that, because that was bullshit, but aside from the fact.
Yeah, well,
I'm still bitter about it after 20 years.
Did Skull Pass... Well, Skull Pass was still 6th edition, right?
Mm-mm. Skull Pass was 7th. 6th edition was the Empire versus Orcs.
Okay, yeah. So you couldn't even justify like the 8-man unit by having a 4-man frontage, because you couldn't use a 4-man frontage anymore.
Nope, not in 6th edition.
Yeah. So did Skull Pass come with a full core rulebook?
Skull Pass did not. Skull Pass came with it was the first one to come with the small rulebook.
Okay, so I will give that's the edge that 5th edition has, is that it came with a full Warhammer.
Sixth edition did.
That's true. It did come with the big red book. But sixth edition, I just remember sixth edition not being so great. I don't remember why.
The box, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, the box set was the miniatures in it were not that great. Mm. I could tell you this, that the orcs had terrible heads. Like the helmets on the heads were really crazy, and all the orcs were kind of monopose. And it came with weird orc archers, and it's like, why the fuck do you have orc archers? There's no reason for it to have orc archers.
Error boys.
Yeah, and then you had the Empire guys were the spearmen whose face could kind of blend in with the body, so the handgunners too.
Oh, right, yeah, I remember that. They're like, their detail just bled into their arm.
Yeah, they was not very well sculpted, and the only great thing that was in that box set was the cannon and the boar chariot, which was also pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. So I guess my love for Battle for Skull Pass, now that I'm looking at them side by side, I really think that my love for Battle for Skull Pass is because of 5th edition, because Battle for Skull Pass is the upgrade of 5th edition, because it comes with a couple little terrain pieces, everything you need to play.
It does.
It's definitely there. All right, fair enough. All right, I like it. Man, old Warhammer box sets were good. And to that point, I feel that this is another one that is kind of a return to...
You think so? I think that this box set is dumb.
There's so many figures in it.
There are a lot of figures in it, okay? I'm not going to lie to you.
There's a ton of figures. You get a full... If I read the article correctly, you get a custom rule book as well. It's a full rule book, but it's a specific one for the box set. Like, it's got its own special cover art.
Well, the nicest thing about Indominus is that you're getting a sweet Necron army in it. Like, that is a decent-sized Necron army you're getting in that box set.
It's very big. There's a lot of Necrons in there.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, wow. Hey, really? So, did they reveal the price yet?
No, but I think it's still going to be like 160.
Okay. Yeah, that's the thing. As long as they don't make the price too much higher than the current 40K box set, Dark Eternal or whatever, the Death Guard versus Marines.
Oh, that's Dark Imperium.
Dark Imperium, yeah. So as long as it's not too much more expensive than that, I think you've got a really great deal. Like that Necron army is, the Necron army is significant. It's two full squads of warriors, six scarab units. There's the hero and his like two weird like slashy guy bodyguards. I don't know what the fuck those things are called.
Those are crypto thralls. It's the Plasmancer and crypto thralls.
Yes, those things are cool. You get the one like lord-esque dude who's on foot. You get the Martian walker, the Necron Ushabti, as I've been calling them.
It's an insane army you get in there. And
then even on the Marine side, you get that's a significant chunk of Marines. I know you don't like it because it comes with bikes.
Yeah, those bikes are so dumb. And we're not even, I can't wait till we talk about the fucking go-kart.
Little blue dune buggy in the sand.
Oh, man. So, okay, I know they have to redesign Primaris because they're getting rid of the regular Marines. So you kind of got to fit all the slots. So and you have to have new stuff so people constantly are buying new Marines. Like, you can't rest on your laurels when it comes to the Marines. Because once everybody feels like they've had enough Marines, then all of a sudden your company tanks. So you got to constantly be putting out Marines. That's fine. You get a couple new things in there. I think the bikes are stupid. They had an opportunity to do something really cool. And they didn't. They made poop bikes, and you ran around on a big fat turd of a bike.
I have to disagree on the bikes, but not strongly. it's just simple. Like, I don't think that they're stupid looking. I just don't think that they're exciting in any way. They're just look like a Marine on a bike. There's nothing. There's nothing about them that makes me go like, whoa, those are badass. It's just like, okay, yeah, those are bikers. Like that's a model that I would look at and be like, is this good in the game? If this is good in the game, this is the only reason I want it. Like, because it doesn't have an aesthetic, like, bang.
Well, it's brand new, Steve, so that means for the next month, it's going to be the best thing in the game.
I don't know about that. The box sets sometimes carry some serious misses. Like the Age of Sigmar box set, the original one, the Khorne versus Stormcast. Each side had something that was pretty worthless. Like the that big giant monster, the cool looking giant monster, the Khorgorath. Yeah, Khorgorath sucked. They're garbage. They're actually just trash. So like that, there's definitely the opportunity for them to have a new model that's completely missed.
They're not actually that trash if you run them with the what's that character model, the one with the whip.
They're probably better now because there's been like two Khorne updates since that box set.
Yeah, I was gonna say bad now.
They were terrible when they first launched. They were just like, it was just like, why would I ever use this?
so we got the whole like reveal of the box set, whatever, and then they're like, so here's some even more new models, and they put out what's essentially their new attack bike, but they call it the Invader ATV, and it is by far the dumbest model Games Workshop has ever produced,
dude. When I saw that, like, all I can think of is fucking all I can think of is that fucking Presidents of the United States song, just because it looks the song fucking has the lyric little blue dune buggy, and like, god damn it, it's a little blue dune buggy.
Well, and I'm thinking, when I first saw that, I was like, oh, someone's making fun of something the Games Workshop released, and then I was like, oh wait, no, that's actually the model. That's not just a Photoshop. Holy fucking shit. This is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Again, I also have to disagree, but not strongly. It's like, again, it's just another one of those things where it's just like, there's nothing super, nothing breaks ground in this model at all. It is very much like, yep, those are Marines and like a little scooter. Like that's because I like the hover tank. And I don't know why they didn't. They should have carried that aesthetic to every vehicle.
Exactly.
Like, that was cool because it's like, oh, that look, because the hover tank looks like a Predator, but it's distinct because you clearly tell it's not, because it's, oh, it's a hover. And if the whole deal is these are supposed to be the super upgrade Marines, why would you give them something that's so close of an equivalent to already existing Marine thing? Give them a hover bike.
Yeah, you have the opportunity to do something new, and you give them an old motorcycle, and then in order to do your attack bike, you're like, well, if they're just gonna do the motorcycle, just do an upgrade of the attack bike and have a cool sidecar on it. And they're like, oh no, sir. Oh no, we want to put something that's utterly ridiculous into your army.
Do the turret on the back. It's just like, okay. It's like, well, it looks like a warthog from fucking Halo. So for me, that's it. Like, I don't have like a visceral, like, oh, that sucks to them. I'm just kind of like, eh, like it's nothing that's cool or interesting. I do, however, really like the portable twin autocannon or like las gun turret thing. I think
you mean the Nazi Flak 88?
is that a real thing?
Oh yeah. Oh no, Games Workshop is, and Warhammer has nothing to do with fascist symbolism or anything like that.
Well, I mean,
out the Flak 88.
No, that was the whole deal in the '80s. It was supposed to be like a joke. It was like
I know, but I mean, it's just within recent times, it's like
they've kind of pulled that back from the they don't make any statement anymore. Like they're like, it's no longer a parody, but it's also like they're just kind of like, whatever, we're just gonna do things.
So I mean, I don't mind it. It's just like a shrunk down version of a Flak 88. It looks like someone was playing bolt action, was like, you know, this would be pretty cool if we put like a twin autocannon on there. What's up with the front of the autocannon guns? What is that thing with like the it's not even like a real barrel on there. Like, what's going on with that thing? Do you know anything?
Well, I mean, I know that's the type of barrel on a 50 cal. I have to
with that slot in the front.
Well, the 50 cal slot, quote unquote, is circular. This one's kind of like a horizontal, like,
yeah, I don't, that's why I don't, it looks, but, like, looks like the damn autocannon squinting at me.
The holes on the side are something that's on the 50 cal.
Those are muzzle suppressor or flash suppressor, whatever it's called. I don't care about guns.
I don't particularly know about the autocannon, but if you were to force me to say, how does this gun function? It looks like that it would fire two rounds simultaneously from each barrel, which is why you would have such a wide exit point. Because normally your exit point is for one large round. That has the pointed top.
That's why I would expect the barrel to have a circle in it as opposed to this weird slot.
Right. So I would imagine that with the only reason for that to be a functional design is because it fires two side-by-side rounds each. I don't actually know, but that's the only thing that makes sense to me, because otherwise you would have just a sphere, a hole, a circle. For it to have that specific shape, it has to be something like that. Or it's firing a non-standard shaped round. A single round that's like a brick or something.
It's a brick. That would be awesome if it shot bricks.
Just shot literal bricks.
Only other thing I wanted to talk about from that release was the new heavy destroyers from the Necrons.
The thick destroyers?
Thick destroyers. So thick.
They look awesome. They look very, very
They just look like they go, whoa, 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 whoa.
Oh, 100,000%. Also, they got rid of the flight stands, which I love because I fucking hate flight stands.
Yeah, I think everybody universally hates flight stands at this point in the hobby.
I think flight stands are, like, perfect example. I was messing around some of my Fallout figures, and there is one figure that is Edie. It's a little iBot that's on a flight stand, and like, I'm like, you know what? This is fine. Like, this is the amount of flight stand that I would be willing to deal with in any army. Like, so you want to have a dude with like a couple servo skulls, and he's got the flight stands with the servo skulls. Okay, that's cool. Don't make me have a unit of six models, two units of six models that have fucking flight stands. It's the worst.
Yeah, actually for flight stands, I actually ended up just buying a clear acrylic rod and using that instead. It's a much sturdier.
I can see that. Yeah, my Nurgle army. It's funny, the plague drones. The plague drones have flight. The plague drones have flight stands. But the Blight Lord dudes, the Puskoils, they do not have flight stands. They're sculpted with on rocks or something that's holding them to the base instead of a flight stand.
Thank goodness these rocks are here for me to slightly rest on.
Yes, well, one of them is the bell looks really good because it's just the bell on the ground and it's coming up. It doesn't look like there's a conveniently placed rock.
We haven't talked about Dan Delanois in a while. Delanois is a huge. He's hugely against models that are posed on rocks because he says it breaks the illusion. Because why would does the guy just carry the rock around the battlefield so that he could throw it down and step on it?
Well, I mean, that's where it comes to the it is a model kit and also a game piece. So that's the Bard talks about that in his video about, I think, is it about, I don't, I don't know. It's a video about models. I don't think it's specifically about HeroQuest, but maybe it is. But he talks about how, you know, when you're designing a miniature, and I agree with this, there's multiple schools of thought, but one of them, Delanois is in the school of thought of it's a game piece first. So if it's a game piece first, scenic bases should not be a thing because it's a game piece. So your base should be as generic and not necessarily uninteresting, but as unbusy as possible. So you're talking like it is a brown kind of like generic-y ground looking ground with like a couple tufts of grass, and like that's the end all be all. Like that's it, because they're a game piece. So it's supposed to be they're anywhere. You're putting them into the game world, and like that's how it fits. Like so any picture makes sense because you know it's just I think it comes out harder on guys, not guys that are on rocks, but guys that are on like pieces of 40K architecture.
Yeah.
The ones where they're like, he's like standing like his legs up on like a crashed piece of like Imperialis like style terrain. Like that looks cool as a model, but as a game piece, it starts to break down for the same reason. Cause it's like, yeah, I'm fighting the Tau on like we're playing a campaign game and my Space Marine army is fighting a Tau army on a jungle planet. So my guy
jungle
is
planet.
Yeah. So we're on a jungle planet of love, and my guy is standing on some like, you know, like he's literally like in the city, like by his base, he's in a city. So I get that, and I feel that. So that's a thing I get. What I've done a lot of times too is I've just done I've made tools that kind of those kind of pieces. I just kind of shave them down and cover them with basing material and just build up that area. So it ends up just looking like a sloping ground.
Yeah.
So like it's just like sloped terrain, which is cool. I mean, I think that's something that they don't do very often at all with bases is like having irregular ground. Cause you know, ground's not fucking flat unless you're somewhere that's been paved. Ground's always got some level of like up and down.
All right, so I don't want to go too much longer than an hour because I think we've gotten yelled at twice now about the length. It's harder because when I'm at your place, like an hour is like the perfect amount of time. But now that we just sit at home, I think it's you know, I'm a little drunk. You might be a little drunk, maybe not drunk, but you know what I'm saying.
I mean, I've definitely done this podcast on edibles.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't want to go too long, but you said you had one more thing you wanted to talk about.
Shit. I forgot it.
Is it a movie?
I got distracted by the rock talk.
By the rock talk? Yeah. Is it bigger than a bread box?
No, I know the number one thing was slime skirmish. So I'm glad that I did that immediately. That was straight up. Like it's very, very cute. I'm trying to think what else it could have been. I mean, what did we do? We dunked on Star Wars.
We did dunk on Star Wars. I'm painting my Star Wars Legion army to look like it's on Naboo.
We do our greatest hits, dunking on Star Wars, being indifferent about 40K models.
Yeah. We haven't talked about Tolkien. You want to talk about Tolkien?
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of...
Ian Holm died.
Yes, that's true. That's true. That makes sense. That would be Tolkien related.
Yes.
Ian Holm, great actor. Old dude, 88 years old.
Yeah. And he played Jack the Ripper in From Hell.
You know what? I didn't like that movie.
I liked From Hell. You didn't like From Hell?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of like, eh. I guess I should not. Maybe not like was very strong. I felt that movie was kind of average. Oh, no, wait. No. That's not the movie I'm thinking of. Fuck. Is Johnny Depp in From Hell?
Yes.
Okay. What is there's another movie that Johnny Depp is in that has a similar
Secret
movie.
Window?
I think I liked
Secret. No, you were thinking of Ninth Gate.
Ninth Gate. Yes, that's the movie I was thinking of. I do not like Ninth Gate. I do not like Ninth Gate because that movie does the thing that pisses me off about the most in movies where they just stop.
Well, here's the weird thing with Ninth Gate. I mean, I could tell you there's multiple things that are weird about that movie.
Oh, it's a very weird movie. I dug the weirdness of the movie.
It's directed by Roman Polanski. It's you know, we could just stop there, but one of the weird things is it's actually based off a book called The Club Dumas, right? and there's a whole fucking it, and the Ninth Gate stuff is a subplot in that book. So there's a whole plot of that book that they don't even talk about in the movie, where it's all about these like rich people who are reenacting, like who are part of like this crazy orgy club that is all about Alexander Dumas. So they talk a lot about like the Three Musketeers, and the movie and the book is literally a kind of a love letter slash treatise on antique book preserving.
All right, I dig it.
And they have this weird subplot, the satanic subplot called about the Ninth Gate, and it's literally an afterthought in the book, and they built the whole movie around that subplot. Because apparently the Three Musketeers orgy stuff was a little much.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. C'est la vie.
C'est la vie.
But no, I liked From Hell. It's not a great movie. The book is better, but it's because the book is Alan Moore and he's a wizard.
It's true. He's an actual wizard.
I mean, like, I like that he says he's an actual wizard, which is cool, and I believe him because, you know, it's Alan Moore saying it. He says he's a wizard, but I mean, it's like, if you said you're a wizard, I'd be like, sure, Steve, you're a wizard.
I'm a wizard.
And then I would go back to, you know, painting my Star Wars figures. Sure, Steve, you're a wizard.
I'm back to painting my clone troopers.
Joe Bob's season finale was last night. And,
Was it the season finale?
Yeah, season finale. It was good. He has a great speech about physical media, which I thought was fantastic.
What were the movies?
The movies were... Oh, fuck. What was the first one? I always forget one of them. The second movie was Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Not as good. It's the lesser known of the Roddy Roddy Piper movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, they live as a perennial actual, like,
it's an actual great movie.
Yeah, it's an actual great movie, a classic. I would consider it required viewing of pop culture, for sure.
Yes.
Hell Comes to Frogtown is a very good movie in its own way, but it is absolutely not anything I would ever consider, like, a cultural touchstone.
No, the first movie was Hellbound, Hellraiser 2.
Yes, Hellraiser 2. Excellent sequel. And yeah. he actually had he had Pinhead on himself, and what was, I can't remember her name, Aubrey Ashley, the protagonist of
the protagonist,
the protagonist of the film. She was on there as well, and she does really creepy paintings, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I just finished last week's, which was Scare Package and Hogzilla, and both of those were terrible. So
oh, you didn't like Scare Package? I liked Scare Package.
Scare Package is like a movie I would make, and I don't like movies that I would make.
I thought the only big miss on the, well, it's an anthology movie, and anthology movies are always divisive. Like people either seem to really like genuinely like anthology movies or really hate anthology movies.
Anthology movies have to be 2/3 great in order for it to be a great anthology.
There was only one big miss, which was the one with the lollipop.
That was just a weird one. It made no sense.
Yeah, it didn't make any, not make any sense, it like didn't actually have a story.
Yeah.
At all, I can see nonsensical things, but like have it some semblance of a plot. Like Eraserhead is a great example of something that.
Well, Eraserhead is David Lynch.
It doesn't make any sense, but it has a plot. That's the example.
Okay.
So you don't have to make sense, but you can still have a plot.
Well, this, I mean,
makes sense. Nor did it have a plot.
Well, and I think that it can be said that a great segment can make the entire movie great. Like for example, Twilight Zone the movie. Twilight Zone the movie is actually really bad, but
the John Lithgow.
Yeah, the Terror 20,000 Feet segment is Nightmare at 20,000 Feet is so good.
Yep.
That it like you have to watch it just for that segment because that's how good it is.
The effects in the kid movie is really good though.
Yeah, that one's just creepy. I think didn't Joe Dante direct that one? I don't remember who directed that segment.
I'm not sure.
And then you have like fucking Landis getting people's head cut off, and you have Steven Spielberg directing one of the most biggest WTFs of all. Like, why the hell you have access to the entire fucking Twilight Zone catalog?
And you go with Kick the Fucking Can.
Yeah, it's just like, Jesus Christ. Yes. And it's not like Spielberg was even in his old like reminiscent state, like where, you know, when you're in your 50s or 60s and you're like, oh, when I was younger, things were better. No, he's like in his 40s at this point. Like he should have still had it in him where he's like, I'm going to reminisce about Kick the Can. What the fuck? But then you have like Creepshow, and I'll make the argument that both Creepshows, Creepshow 1 and Creepshow 2, are both excellent.
I love Creepshow. Yeah, excellent. And Creepshow is a great anthology series now on Shutter.
Yeah, it's way more hit and miss than the actual movies. Yeah.
For sure. Well, it's one of the challenges of making an anthology series where you now have to, some are going to end up too long. And it's just the way it is.
Well, and that was my problem with Scare Package, and I'll for people at home who might understand this, I go, meta is okay if it's done by a master, right? Mm-hmm. So like a meta person who can do it, Tarantino. I think Tarantino is like an excellent example of someone who can dabble in meta and get away with it because mm-hmm. he does it in such a way that you don't even realize that you're dabbling in meta. Meta, like it is in Scare Package, is like, it's like when you read a non-Onion
part. Yes.
Where you're just like, this could have been so much funnier if they didn't beat you over the head with the joke.
Yeah, there's a few that work out though. Like I very much did enjoy that, like the dude who realized he was a character in a horror movie who set up people to suffer horror movies. I thought that was pretty humorous because that's always what they get. It's like, why are there always cursed objects and like things that are bad in the horror movie? Like, who launches that? And it's like, oh, it's that guy, and he knows it. He doesn't want to do it, but he's doing it because he's bound to it. I enjoyed it. I think it's a film festival movie for sure.
Yeah,
it's not like had I seen that movie in the theater, I probably would have been like, eh. I probably would not. That would have probably soured my experience. But seeing it on Joe Bob specific, that's the thing I was musing about, like how like the Joe Bob framing actually can improve or make some movies that are otherwise less watchable far more watchable.
Oh yeah,
like Hogzilla. Hogzilla's unbelievably bad. Like that might be one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my fucking life. It's terrible. It's like a bad sci-fi channel movie, but doesn't have any of the things that are at least humorous about bad sci-fi channel movies, because
like Birdemic.
Yeah, Birdemic or Mansquito. Because usually those movies have like some special effect that's done so badly it's funny. Yeah. So like you're watching the scenes like great, but Hogzilla's budget was so bad they didn't even have a Hogzilla.
No. One day my script for Pumarilla will get made by sci-fi.
Is that a puma body with a gorilla head or a gorilla body with a puma head?
It's a gorilla upper torso with a puma's legs. So it's fast like a puma, but it's strong like a gorilla.
Gotcha.
So it's like, it's double terrifying because it's fast and strong.
All right, I like it.
It's like reading a Hard Times article. You're just like, oh, this joke could have been funnier if it was actually written by someone who understood comedy.
The video game version of the Hard Times is good. I think it's called The Hard Drive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's really funny. They hit really good. They're at the same level of excellence that Tabletop Inquirer is.
Well, Tabletop Inquirer, what makes Tabletop Inquirer funny is they're just headlines. Like Hard Times tries to write the article, which is not funny. Like the headline could be funny, but the article is not funny. The Onion will make the article funny. That's the difference.
Right.
The one that recently got me on Tabletop was the one I sent to you where it's awkward guy from the game store misses butting into your game saying weird random stuff.
Yes.
Because that is the most truest thing I've ever had in my life. And it's part of the reason why I don't like going to game stores. But it's great now because you can just go in there, you grab your shit, you can talk to the guy behind the counter for a little bit, and then you fuck off.
Yep, chit-chat for a little bit and leave.
Yeah. But when you're playing a game, it's like the guy comes up to you and he's like, oh, you're playing with Space Wolves, huh?
Wow, those skinks have a 4+. That's definitely like I don't understand the social contract that where in a game store people just feel that they're entitled to just like butt in and like interrupt you having personal time with someone else, but hey, whatever.
You know what I'd like it to be though? I kind of wish it was more like a bar where it's like the people who are there not to play a game, who are sitting there alone at the bar, would just stay at the fucking bar, right? And they would just randomly enter into like an important piece of the conversation that you needed to know. Like if you're sitting there like, you know, the ruler of France from, you know, right after the fall of the Roman Empire. And they're like, oh, it's Charlemagne. And you're like, oh yeah, Charlemagne. And thank you. Like, that's what I want. You know, I don't need this person like going there and like talking to me on a treatise about how it's not actually a Flak 88 because it's twin autocannons, and the Flak 88 was a single cannon, so it can't be Nazi symbolism. That's the part I don't need. But anyway, so we're at our hour and 15 minutes now. So I'm gonna at least start the ending crawl before we go too much longer. You could go to Game Classy Podcast Facebook page. It's the best way to get in contact with us. You could also like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes, and like, comment, subscribe on the YouTube. I don't think I put the last one on YouTube. I don't remember.
Mm.
But I don't care. Then you could also listen to our sister podcasts. You have Shin Play on Neo.
That's it. There's no other one.
Yeah. At this point, there is no other one.
Yeah. Weep Down hasn't existed for a long time.
Yeah. Steve, until next time.
It's a robot. Ash is a goddamn robot.
Game Classy.